This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Be a part of the show by tweeting Matthew at RealLauro5. Backspin Golf is brought to you by French Lick Resort and Casino, Men O' War Golf, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Clark's Pump and Shop, and Dan Cummins of Paris and Georgetown. Now let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Hi there. Morning, Sean. How are you doing? Come on, man. It's okay. Everything's okay. Welcome to Backspin Golf, everybody, for this beautiful Sunday morning. Yesterday was a great day on the golf course. A great day. Just being out there playing golf anywhere is a great day. No matter, it doesn't even matter what you shoot. You can't keep track because the ball doesn't go in the cup. Anyway, I'm going to mention this to Perry French. Perry French. I just thought of something. Perry French, who is actually in his car in the French mobile, as we call it, driving around somewhere. Good morning, Perry French.
Good morning there, Matthew Lawrence. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm okay. Cleveland Golf Strix on Golf Sexio, Golf Asics, Perry French. Boy, that's a lot of titles and stuff.
I know, it's a lot of fun.
That's good, though. I mean, it's a good thing. All right, here's what I was just thinking. When I played golf yesterday with a friend of mine, we actually laughed a couple times because we were playing a skins game. And there were a couple times where you'd putt and it would hit the, you know, the styrofoam thing they have holding the flag, like on the right side. And we had arguments about whether that was actually a putt that went in or it didn't go in. And it just goes to, my thought is, golfers will argue about stuff like that forever. They just need something to argue about, right?
Right. And that's very controversial in scoring. If you skim the outside and hit it, you know, what were the chances of it falling in the cup based on speed? You know?
Right.
They had one rule. They were saying if the ball bounces more than like a, you know, 10, 12 inches away from the styrofoam, you can't count it because of speed. But we all know that if you hit the pin sometimes a little too far firm, it goes in.
Yeah, so, yeah.
You have to play it one way or the other. If it hits the foam, it's deemed in, or use the one-foot rule on the deflection.
Oh, I guess. I didn't think of that. Okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy. If you've played it where the foam is not quite out of the cup, but it's just below the surface level.
Yeah.
So the ball can actually fall, but sit down about two-thirds or halfway.
Yeah.
You'll get some interesting results there. The ball will kind of pop out, and you go like, what did it do? It's not in the hole, but it's foam.
That's right.
So you have to be, you have to have some kind of local rules in play.
Yeah.
So what's on your mind today?
Well, let me tell you what I've been thinking about talking to you about, because we haven't spoken about this. There's been a lot of talk about the Ryder Cup. I mean, obviously, the tournaments and starting when we're going to start, and all, there's a lot of talk about all that. But it interests me when pros, such as the voice of golf right now, other than Tiger, who is Rory, says they don't want to play the Ryder Cup without fans because that wouldn't really be the Ryder Cup. We all know how big an influence the crowds have, whether you're playing in the States or you're playing over in Europe, and how boisterous and all the stuff.
Right.
But I say baloney. I say it's golf. It's just, to me, like football or baseball or these competitions, even the Ryder Cup, will have multi-millions of people watching because it's live.
Sure, and these
are the most competitive guys that in the world that are on the pro golf tours, right? Am I right with that?
No, listen, exactly right. Now, I think from a professional player perspective, one of the things that they would like to have in, as part of their experience, is that fanfare, that the cheering, the Patrick Reed with the putting the ear up, the hand over his ear. I think they want to have that ability to feel that. It'd be like, in my perspective, it'd be like playing a Super Bowl without any fans.
Uh-huh.
How would that be? Yes, millions of people will watch it. But what's the player experience? And I think we take a little bit less of the fan influence in golf than we do in other pro sports and amateur sports as well, where there's a lot of crowds, that there's a momentum to grab from the crowd, the home field advantage, all that.
Okay.
I think that there is a home field advantage when it comes to that type of competition in the Ryder Cup scenario, just like when Tiger's playing against Rory coming down the stretch and everybody's pulling for Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of player edge to that.
So yeah. Oh, I understand that. Here's my devil's advocate response.
Okay.
You're a freaking professional athlete. You shouldn't need the momentum of the crowd. If you're playing in a Ryder Cup and it's I won't use Patrick Reed because I hate him. And Gary Woodland is playing Ian Poulter.
Yeah.
And there's no fans. If I'm Gary Woodland playing for a Ryder Cup, I want to kick Poulter's butt without the fans. You shouldn't need fans as a professional golfer to get you juiced up. That's how I feel.
They needed them to get juiced up. I said as part of their experience, they want to have it in front of fans. So to your point, that's a little bit selfish on the player's part.
Correct.
The story's part for saying that, because, listen, if you're playing for the fans that are at their house watching this, or
that's right, they're fans
to watch it.
Yeah,
they can at least do that. Now, I think to flip that script, I think they're going to be, come September.
Yeah,
all things moving forward, I think they're going to be allowed to have fans, but it's just not going to be as many. It's going to be a 50 percentile. They're going to have to, if you have day one or day, you're going to get some fan experience, but it's going to be very much a reduced crowd.
Okay.
So I think they'll get both of the world. And the other thing, too, is, you know, we talked about this with the PGA Tour, the first four events, not having fans.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to affect the way the golf is played.
Yeah, right? But I understand it will.
The bounces, it goes into,
well, here's,
wouldn't normally go into.
Here's the great thing. You and I have talked about that before, I think, on the last show. I said that.
Okay.
That's what it'll mean. You know who else said that? Brooks Koepka.
Yes.
They
did.
Asked Brooks. And this was the greatest. They asked Brooks how he would feel about playing tournaments with no fans. Brooks Koepka on no fans at PGA Tour events. Guys are going to lose balls.
Well, so would that might be a boost in the arm for the JQ golfer who watches pro golf and say, hey, I guess I'm not so bad after all.
There you go.
Find my tee shot over the blind hill, and you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll have spotters out there, but yes, it'll be an interesting thing to see, and let's hope we at least get to see it start with in June and things get rolling and
see
how it plays out. But I think the Ryder Cup. I'm with you. Play the Ryder Cup. Period.
Yeah.
Come on.
If
I'm playing a match against you, and we're still gonna both get excited when we make a good shot,
and
vice versa, you know. But I think they need to have that happen and don't cancel it because they can't have fans. I'm just I'm being optimistic that we'll have.
Yeah, me too. And here's the thing: imagine how much closer your team has to be. Like if there's no fans, you need everybody, and they usually have it. But that team chemistry is even more important if those are the guys cheering you on. It'll be great.
Right.
Oh, wait.
Well, probably the guy, what?
I just had another idea. This is what happens when I talk to you. I just had another idea. You know how we just had the pro football draft, the NFL draft, and people's had, you know, all this Zoom stuff going on and in people's houses, videos and stuff? That's what we need to do.
Virtual crowd.
With the Ryder Cup. Have from all over homes in Europe and all over homes in America watching the Ryder Cup, and then we could all have videos of all the crazy stuff people are doing in their houses while the Ryder Cup's going on.
Great idea.
Oh, yeah.
That would certainly be another way to make the event happen. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This could actually have the volume on for the players to hear the Jumbotron.
Nice. That, there you go. Big speakers out there on the golf course.
And they could flip and say, they'll go USA. And
right.
They'll
there you go.
Flip the screen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
The producers would have quite the job to be able to start.
That's all right. They have nothing else to do.
There you go.
All right. Okay.
All right, rules of golf.
There we go. Every week you've been updating us on some rules of golf. This is great. Right. What do you got?
Well, one of the rules of golf it's been around ever since that, the rules of golf were invented, and that's if you're playing golf and you actually hit a shot and it strikes your own equipment. We talked about the golf bag being in play. And one of the things that I'm going to cite myself is this happened to me last fall. And what happened was, I reacted in a totally different way because I really didn't think about how the rule had changed. Okay, so what is? I'll give you the scenario.
Okay,
I'm hitting a chip shot from about 30 yards to a pin, and I have my putter in my hand, and I walk up to the green to look at and survey the shot. Okay,
yeah,
as you should,
mm-hmm.
Just to get an idea where to land it, how the ball is going to roll, what that was. So it was very sloped from front to back, from back to front. And the pin was about mid, so I had to carry it over this ridge. And I knew that. If I didn't carry over the ridge, the ball was going to probably come off the false front.
Okay.
So
I got
it. I walked up to the green. I put both clubs. I had my putter and my wedge. And I set my putter down on the fringe of the green.
Yeah.
Just because I didn't want to carry it back. I had to walk 20 yards back to my ball.
Of course.
but I put it in a fairly...
what you thought was a safe spot.
Safe spot, but it was off to the side on the front side of the green.
Okay.
It was coming in and out of the front of the green.
Right.
I hit my pitch shot, and sure enough, I didn't hit it with enough speed to carry the top of the ridge.
Uh-huh.
So it hit the top of the ridge.
Rolled back.
Here it comes slowly rolling back to me. And I'm thinking, geez. At first I was upset about that happening, that I didn't make a good enough shot.
Right.
But then as I looked up, as I started seeing the path of the ball, I said, oh, hell, it's going to hit my putter.
Uh-oh. Oh.
Thinking that this is now going to cost me, in the old rules of golf, it's going to cost me a two-stroke penalty.
That's not now.
Rules of golf. Yes.
Oh.
But you know what I did?
What?
In the words of George Carlin, famous comedian, Zach, I forgot. I forgot that was the rule. So when my ball rolled back into my putter and rested up against my putter shaft, I was not very happy with myself.
I'll bet.
Because I thought I had incurred a two-shot penalty.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went, you got to be kidding me. What did I do that for? I'm just really... And so I was so upset about it. And of course, when I picked my putter up, the ball moved an inch, so I replaced it.
Yeah.
And then I just really quite nonchalantly putted the ball up. And, of course, I didn't think a very good putt. I was quick to play. I was very distracted. And I end up, what I thought making was an 8 on the hole. Right?
But it was only a 6.
It was only a 6. That's right. There's no penalty for that. I didn't know that going in.
This is awesome.
I should have caught myself and said, okay, I missed the shot, but I have a chance to make par here with my 40-foot putt. Off the fringe and should have given it more of my attention and detail rather than being a huffy little spoiled brat.
So this is the other, aside from the rule of golf we're talking about, this is also another reminder about how you're supposed to, you know, manage yourself while you're playing golf.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Well.
All right.
You know, thankfully there's no penalty, but that is not a penalty. If the ball does hit your club, roll back, whether it's your club or your bag. A lot of people are carrying their clubs, parking their golf ball, their clubs on the fringe of the greens.
Right.
You know, you can't deliberately put it in play. You can't deliberately try to deflect your ball. That would be deemed a penalty. If it was interpreted
intentional.
That's why you positioned your bag that way. But certainly something as arbitrary as that. I didn't want the ball to come backwards 40 feet to my putter.
Right.
So I wasn't trying to do that on purpose. But if you said, hey, the chances are I'm going to miss it, and you put it directly in front of your line, instead of rolling back 20 yards, it would have rolled to the fringe. So there could have been interpreted as an advantage if I would have put it directly in line.
But
you didn't do that.
Thing
that happened, and no. it was an odd thing to happen. But so remember that rule. Also,
yep.
That, of course, in match play, there's a penalty as well, so you don't lose the hole.
Right.
You can continue to play and just play the shot. So
all right.
You know,
well,
you play the game enough. The rules of golf come into play for most everybody. You have some.
If you get to be old enough, they'll change.
There you go.
All right. So. Well, you're the greatest. I miss you. We keep right, saying it. We got to play one day.
These weeks are kind of clicking by. I think we're going to get ready. I'm making a road trip out west, so hopefully we'll get some. Things will change in the golfing world, hopefully by the end of May. So.
Okay. Cool. All right. We'll talk to you next
Take
week.
Care.
See ya.
Have a good one.
You
See
too.
Ya. Bye.
Perry French. I did it again. Sean, this is your fault. You're the producer. You're supposed to remind me of stuff I have to do. You know that. Talent doesn't ever take the blame. And Sean says, talent? What are you talking about? Yeah, I know you. Hi, Chris Mascaro. Good morning. Peeps, you want an incredible podcast? Next on the Tee. Go to podbean.com. Every week, Chris is the best. Incredible guests, too. All right, we'll be back. It's Backspin Golf, ESPN Sports Radio, 1300 and 92.5.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Man O' War Golf, the golf improvement experts.
Welcome back. Now, here on Backspin Golf, Sean, we've been doing this show about 6 years or so. In the history of this show, how many times have I had a guest 2 weeks in a row, part one and part two? How many would you say? Have we ever done this before? Sean doesn't think so. I'm telling people what Sean said because he's obviously not on the radio. So this is kind of a first for us. And last week was so great, and Joe Duplantis is so interesting to me and to a lot of my friends who heard our show last week. We're having him back for part two. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Matthew.
if you're listening and you missed last week, Joe is all those green reading books that we see the pros pull out during tournaments. And people at clubs have them now, so you might see them other places. Joe is the guy, one of the few guys, I'll put it that way, that makes those Tour Pro green reading books. And we had a great conversation last week about are they good, are they not good? People have different opinions. But this week, Joe, I want to start with you in specifically, because you were a caddy for 23 years, I think you said?
Yes. Yeah, I was caddying for Carl Peterson when I started doing the books.
Okay. And this was at how were you? So you were still caddying when you started doing these?
Yeah, and I'm still caddying for Carl, a couple of players when they play, Jason Bone.
Oh, cool.
And Jonathan Bird.
Wow.
And they're doing limited schedules, so I caddy for them. Those weeks are really busy. I'm doing the books at night. It's a bit of a juggle. It's a day and night juggle. Only for a few days, so you stick it out.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that last week, too, your schedule and how you sleep in three-hour shifts and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Because again, we're going to get sidetracked, and I want to hear how it started, but every day when you're doing these books, you're putting them in the lockers at the golf course for these pros every day before the start of a round. So you're up till all hours of the night finishing this, and then you got to be out at the golf course, 3 hours before the first tee time? Is that how I remember?
Yeah, well, what happens is I make the books each night, like we were saying, and I put them in their lockers. And we also have issues with, rain delays.
Oh, yeah.
Or, everything like that. So it's funny, we're all struggling with what we're doing these days, but I've been used to waiting to see when we're restarting again. That's what we've done for all these years.
Yep.
But
all right.
Yeah, when I first began, I was caddying for Carl Peterson, and I met J. Jim Straka, who started a company who they scan the greens.
Okay.
So those scanning, and he has a website, strakaline.com, and you can go on there and make books similar to what I'm making on the PGA Tour. So I met him, and he kind of gave up on the PGA Tour. What I helped him with is he didn't know what players on the tour would want,
mm-hmm.
and kind of over inundated them with information. And from my years of caddying, I know for a fact half the time we spend on the range is keeping reps away from your player, because you just can't look at every new thing that's out,
right.
practice with every new thing that they've made. So half the time you're keeping people away, and that's what he didn't realize, especially in the short amount of time of trying to show the players something.
Mm-hmm.
I came in and said, hey, this has got to be as simple as possible, or else, I mean, they're really going to not like, they're going to say to each other, look at all this information, and high five each other at how ridiculous it all looks.
Right.
To imagine trying to do it in the 5 seconds that they're reading a putt.
It's a great point, and I just had it while you were talking about that. I had a visual of you being on the range with Carl,
yeah.
next to all these
yeah.
tour players, and yeah. all these reps like vultures kind of trying to get over there and say, hey, look what I got. It's pretty funny.
For sure. I mean, they have to get badges at the beginning of the year, so that's a whole other process.
Yeah.
And you get to know the regular guys, so it's tough for them, too, because they learn, you know, in their very first year, they're also inundating the players, trying to push too hard, and then they learn to hang back a little.
Right.
And that's what I helped out with, and especially showing them what the players would want and what the players would not want.
Yeah.
There was a huge thinning out process, and what it came down to was a gravity map, which is the green maps that we have with the arrows,
mm-hmm.
and I'm able to put in the whole location for each day in the book, and that's like we're saying, and other new things happened at the same time that made it work. The PGA Tour made a new rule because players that were first out in the morning were complaining they didn't get to see the hole locations before they began. So first tee times, we'll say generally first tee times 6:45.
Okay.
Depending on, that's about when it is.
Right.
So guys, you know, for the last 40 years, guys were rolling up to the tee, 6:45, picking up, and each morning at the tee, they had the hole location sheet, and that's what we use each day. And they were getting them for the first time. Meanwhile, guys in the afternoon, and the pin placements have gotten more and more difficult over the years.
Yeah.
The guys in the afternoon had an advantage. So in one of their meetings, they decided, hey, we got to release these hole locations the night before. And that's what opened the door for me to making a book with the hole locations and showing them the inside the hole uphill areas that they can hit their approach shot to.
Mm-hmm.
So like I was saying before, the majority of them are using them for their approach shot. That's what they're looking at in the fairway while the caddy is getting a yardage.
Right. Right. I remember in that article, I think Louis Oosthuizen was talking about it. I think.
Yes.
And
yeah, he uses them.
It was so fascinating to read what he was thinking about, as you say, on their approach shots and where he wanted to live. Now, we all know these guys, okay, the pin's back right, they want an uphill putt. So the yeah. commentators on TV are saying he wants to keep it 15 feet left of the hole, blah, blah, you know, the general yeah. stuff. Well, to think about what Louis Oosthuizen is thinking about is so much even more specific than yeah. that. Because of all the work that's been done with these books.
Well, what's happened, and this is the biggest thing that they don't do when they're commentating on TV, and I don't hear very much about, is just telling people that these locations are so extremely different. The hole locations are so different than what we're used to seeing every day.
Right.
So that's why they're always constantly talking about, you know, hitting it here 15 feet and
yeah.
hitting it, you know, on the fatter side, but they don't really explain, hey, this is 3 from the edge, and if you miss on the short side, we call it, with
yep.
3 yards from the edges, you can't get up and down from there while you're hitting it a good shot to 15 feet, and you have to make that for par. So the amount of holes that they play, you just have to go on to the fatter side,
right,
and make putts.
Yeah, yep. That makes sense, too.
All right. What tends to happen.
All right. Now,
get into little hot streaks or cold streaks, but yeah.
All right. Now, so I want to go back to here you are with Carl, and you talk to Jim, his name is, right?
Yes.
Okay. You talk to Jim, and you say, this is way too much information, and here's what we're... So how did you actually do the first week that you did these? That's what I want to hear about. What did you do?
It's funny because I have zero... I mean, these are software developers that I was working with, and I have zero office experience. I caddied my entire life since college.
Right.
So they're using technical computer terms for everything, and I have no idea what they're doing.
I'm still that way.
What they're talking about. I'm still that way too. I just know a little bit about that.
Okay.
But going back to that, we started, this is actually really unbelievable thinking back. We started with we had to go to Best Buy and get printers.
Yeah, there you go.
And I didn't have anybody who was using the books yet. Mm-hmm. So I printed these first models out with hole locations and with the straight uphill putts in them and started showing players. And the first guys I got, actually, this is interesting, is Graham McDowell, Jonathan Vegas, and Paul Casey.
Wow.
I think were my first.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a really good start. It might have been the second or third week I was out with them. And they were like, we're all in. They're like, hey, I'll look at those. I'll look at those tomorrow. And that's out of everybody. Most of them, have no interest. They're trying to keep information out because mm-hmm. you can get confused so easily.
Right.
So mostly I was showing them, hey, we can take information off because they were customizable.
Yeah.
I could put more or less.
Depending on the player.
Right.
Right.
I could put more or less on there. So I started out really low information instead of showing them everything at first. I started with really low information mm-hmm. and waited for them to ask for more, which they did.
Yeah. Well, and
gave them a little sample.
Those three guys, it's like anything else. When you have players like that saying, this is cool, I want to use this, and somebody else hears that Graham is using this book, then you're off and running.
It's such a small community.
Yeah.
Everyone's a family out there every day.
Yep.
I tell people all the time, it's like college. There's 150 guys out there,
yep.
150 caddies you see every day, so you see them all. And it's actually been great fun. When you're caddying, it's more competitive, so you say hello, like you did in college when you're walking by. But now I'm kind of showing them, so I get to know everybody and their family.
That's so great.
So it's been a lot of fun.
That's great. Okay, here's another technical question I had for you.
Yeah.
So we talked a little last week about this. So you go back at the end of, let's say you're caddying, and you go back at the end of the day to your hotel room, and you have a printer there, and you have this software, and now you have to print out how many of these books?
Well, shoot, at the end, I guess we were up to, I was making about 60 a night.
Okay.
Yeah. And what was really interesting is, when not having any experience, I didn't know what printer to use.
There you go.
And,
or what kind of ink, probably.
What kind of ink? Yeah, this is really back to the basics. So the one drawback is I can't just start them up in the morning if I'm not caddying, because the tour rule is they can't release them till darkness.
Right.
So those hole locations are allowed out. No one could sneak onto the golf course the night before
and
hit putts to it was
when
they made the rule. So originally I got a regular printer at Best Buy, but these books are legal size paper, and they print on both sides, which none of the local print shops had a printer that did that.
Wow.
So it started out really ridiculous, because I would have to print everything out on one side and flip all the pages and print out on the other side. And shuffle them in between, and then they would stick together. And
I was going to say, that's a nightmare.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. Every night I was throwing away half the book, and it was going right till morning. There was nights where it came out at 8 p.m., and I was printing the last books at when I had to go to the golf course, and I put them in an hour before that first tee time, which is going to be around 5:45. So they're all in really early. They don't have to worry. But I've gone right to that first tee time plenty of times.
Yeah. Amazing. This this whole thing is just amazing to me. And I can't tell you how much I love talking to you about this stuff. I mean,
well, I'm glad you're interested in it.
No, it's not just me though, Joe. It's not just me. I mean, everybody that watches golf on TV, that plays golf, some more than others, have an interest, even if they don't realize it, in those books, because they see all the guys using them. And
I'm looking forward to them being more familiar with everybody who's interested in it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that'll happen sooner rather than later. And before I let you go, is there a website that people can actually go and look at the books and how it's done?
Yeah, that strackaline.com.
S-T-R.
S-T-R-A-C-K-A-L-I-N-E.com.
Okay. That's perfect. And that way they can check this out. And I'm so glad that I made a really good new friend in you, and I'll talk to you soon. And again, thank you so much for spending a couple of shows with us.
No problem. Thank you, Matthew. I'm looking forward to the tournament next time we're in Kentucky.
Yeah, baby. All right.
Looking forward to it.
See
All
ya.
Right, thank you.
Okay, Joe.
Bye.
So great. Just great. All right. We'll be back. You bet we will. It's Backspin Golf on ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Edwin Watts Golf.
Welcome back. Yippee. It's time for one of my favorite people, Matt Saturnus from Plugged In Golf. How you doing, pal?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in, playing some golf, which is good. We get to now play some golf. You are up in the great north of our country, up around Chicago. So as here, this depends on the weather and what's going on and different things. But you got to play golf by yourself. You went out alone very early in the morning, right?
Yes. I had the second tee time. Today's May 1st. We're talking on May 1st. And it was the first day the course was opened back up in Illinois. I had the second tee time. We got frost delayed, but the second guy out on the course today, and it was great. Playing golf again just felt like a little bit of normal life. It was wonderful.
So today was the first day that courses in Illinois opened?
Yes.
Okay. This is because our courses here opened a little while ago. They were closed for a little while, and then they opened probably, I want to say, maybe a week ago or 10 days ago. Anyway,
Okay. So
there you are. It's beautiful. The sun's coming up, and it's perfect. We loved that time on the golf course. And something happened to you while you were on one of the holes. Tell us what happened.
So it's a municipal golf course. Not a municipal golf course, but it just winds through a neighborhood.
Okay.
And I hit a tee shot. It was a really good tee shot.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm walking off the tee box, again, by myself, nobody within a quarter mile of me, a minivan goes down the road and guy screams, "Go home," out the window. And I'll be honest, it rattled me a little bit for a minute. I was like, what is going on here? And I kind of stopped and thought about it. I was like, you know, am I in the wrong here? I really don't think I am. I think it's okay to be playing golf. There's nobody near me. I've run into way more people. I was way closer to people when I take my kids on a walk in the neighborhood.
Yeah, right.
It definitely kind of rattled me for a minute there, but I got over it and got back to playing golf and enjoyed myself. So.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, everybody, that's part of the problem, one of the many problems with what's going on with all of us. Everybody has different ideas about what's happening, what should happen, all those, and we don't get into that stuff, obviously. But as I've been saying for a while now, a golf course, if done the way we all should do it, is the safest place to be of anywhere, especially when you're by yourself and you're out walking just in acres and acres of open land without anybody near you. It's the perfect place to be.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I actually just did a poll on my Twitter account the other day, mm-hmm. asking people what's going on where they are. And it was interesting seeing how there's really no consistency to the policies across the country.
Right.
As you said, your courses were open before mine. There are places that are letting out foursomes. Illinois is just doing twosomes with no carts unless you have a medical necessity.
Right.
But a lot of places are doing one person in a cart.
That's what we do here. Right now,
as you said, if you do it right, whether you're one person in a cart, no carts, you know, twosomes, as long as you're having some common sense about it, I think a golf course is probably not a bad spot. And really, there are some things that probably should have taken place 15 years ago, as far as helping golf move forward.
Yes,
that are happening. You know, things like, really, is there any need for me to go into the clubhouse to pay? We've got phones, we've got the internet, we can.
Right.
Handle this up front,
mm-hmm.
right? Just have less contact, and I can just come out and, you know, talk to a starter who today was inside of a cart that was fully enclosed.
Right.
Just kind of told him, here's my name, and he's got the checklist. Yeah, you're good to go. And I was off, and I never saw another person.
There you go. I mean, that's how our courses are doing it here. The clubhouse, the pro shops are all closed, but they have somebody out there either in front of the pro shop or at the first tee. And that's the way you do it. Plus, what you said was really interesting when you were talking about what you did this morning, and you talked about the feeling of some kind of normalcy, some kind of something that made you feel good again, which we're all looking for. If you play golf, it's a great time to do it.
Yeah. And I took this experience and I went to Twitter again,
mm-hmm.
and I asked, I said, genuinely, if somebody feels the same way this guy who yelled at me does, I'd really like to understand what motivates that. And the best response I got was that people are angry that they can't do the things they like to do,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sympathetic to. You know, if you really like to bowl or whatever it is you like to do that maybe is shut down still, I'm sorry for you, and I we're all missing certain things, but I don't know, yelling out a van window doesn't seem like it makes anything better.
Well, it does, obviously. It doesn't. And like you say, you're being very generous there when you say, I understand you're missing something. One thing has nothing to do with the other. I mean, by you being able to do something you love doing, it means nothing to the person who can't bowl. I mean, it's absurd. But there's a lot of absurdity around now, as we know.
Plenty. Plenty.
All right. Well, I'm glad you got to go out. That makes me feel good. I'm happy for you. That's what the idiot in the van should have been thinking. Look how lucky that guy is. I'm happy for him. All right. Now, we're talking with Matt Saturnus of Plugged In Golf, and this is absolutely the best Twitter account /website that you can go to for reviews, impartial reviews of everything to do with golf, as well as other great things. Here's something, as I always go through, as you know, your Twitter account that interested me. I stopped right away. You spoke with somebody named Bruce Miller, who is with Golf Pride, and your question was, how should you pick your grips? How often do pros change theirs? That's something that I've always felt. I change mine the start of every new season. I change my grips. I think most people could have their clubs 5 years and not change them, or longer. What did you and Bruce talk about in terms of grips?
Yeah, so Bruce has got a wonderful base knowledge. He's been with Golf Pride over a decade. He was on the Plugged In Golf podcast and answered a ton of questions. But to answer your question directly, he said about every, I think 60 rounds was his number. Every 60 rounds, you ought to be changing those grips. So if you're playing every week, you're probably at least every other year, which at a
right.
But if you're practicing in between, probably once a season.
Yeah. Oh, practice. Right. That's right. That counts too.
Yeah. Well, nobody's doing that anymore. Yeah. Our ranges here are closed.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I think people fall into one of two camps. Either they change them every year like you do or like I would, Or they change them when they literally fall off the club.
Yes.
I changed a set for a friend of my dad's recently, and I swear some of those grips were older than I am. they were in horrible shape. I don't know how he even held on to them. And one of the points that Bruce made is that they're really working hard to make the grip a performance piece of the club, not just the thing you hold on to, but something that's really got performance benefits. And that's where he got into talking about how to pick a grip, what kind of size, shape, do you like a reminder, do you like different textures, what weather do you play in? There are a lot of things to think about, and he really went into detail on a lot of them on the podcast.
And this is so great because it's something that those of us that watch golf and watch the Golf Channel, even when there's no live golf being played, I'm still watching the Golf Channel, you see these commercials for Golf Pride grips, and that's what they're talking about. I mean, you know, these grips that help not only help you align your hands on the club, but there's different ways of doing that. It's actually pretty remarkable when you think about it, but it makes sense because that's how you contact the club in your hand. It makes sense.
Yeah, it's the only point of contact. The
right.
thing that he told me that was really eye-opening is that reminder grips or ribbed grips where it's got a little bit, mm-hmm. Little bit of a bump at the bottom of the grip.
Right.
It used to be a very, very small part of the retail market, but I think he said something like half the tour plays with a reminder grip.
Oh, okay. So
if half the guys who are the best in the world need that reminder or like that reminder, maybe all of us who are, you know, working for a living ought to take advantage of that and get a little help.
Why? Just because the best in the world do it? I don't need it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I love those things.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. All right, real quick, we got a couple of minutes left. Something else that I wanted to talk to you about that I thought was interesting was about people's golf games, and especially during this time. You put up a thing a couple weeks ago. It's a lesson. There are clear reasons why your golf game isn't improving, and you list them and offer solutions. Your website is fantastic. What are a couple of the reasons why my golf game isn't improving? Go ahead. Tell me.
So one of them, and this is a tough one right now because, as I said, a lot of ranges are closed.
Yeah.
A lot of people just don't practice. That's reason number one.
Reason one.
Sitting in your closet. And I think, if I could back up a little, the overarching point here is just be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think that's kind of the theme of the website in a lot of ways. If you're not practicing, don't expect to get better, and that's totally cool. Go out and shoot what
right.
you need to shoot,
right.
by all means. But don't get mad about it. Don't not practice and then be mad.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the other things I talk about are having a plan. If you can go to the range every day and not get better because you're just out there spraying balls with no idea what you're working on, why you're there,
right.
anything else. We see plenty of people who are at the range with their phone out half the time.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not getting anything done, just like the people who go to the gym to sit on the weight bench and
right, and talk know. On their phone. Yeah.
Right? They're not getting in good shape. You're not getting better at golf. And then the last thing was changing your plan all the time. Changing your plan all the time is the same as not having one. If
mm-hmm.
today you've got this tip, but tomorrow you got that tip, well, you know, you're just grasping at straws. So.
Those are good thoughts. We're lucky we have Man of War Golf here, which is the best practice facility anywhere. It's staggering. I wish you could see it. And they've been open the whole time. They're social distancing. They put a big bucket of balls out, and you go and pick it up, and their putting green is huge. And so there really isn't here in our little city, there's no excuse to not be out working on your game. And as you say, if you don't work on it, it's like me. There are still times I go out and I chunk a chip. And as my brother Mitchie always says, how many times did you go out and just chip this week? Two? Three? No. Okay, then shut up, he says.
Yeah.
And
he's got a good perspective.
Yeah.
A smart guy.
Yep. All right. You're the greatest. You know how I feel about you, and thanks for jumping on with us. Hopefully you get to play some more golf. I play some golf, and then there'll be some live events we can talk about maybe, and that'd be great too.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. See ya. Matt Saturnus, pluggedingolf.com. It's great. All right. I'll be right back here next week by myself with Sean. So I'm not by myself. I'm with Sean. But I'll talk to Perry again on the phone. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our incredible partners, Lexington Parks and Rec, our great golf courses. They're open. Just find out what you have to do. Go to playgolflex.com, book it online, and then you're good to go. French Lick Resort, the casino's closed, the hotels are closed, but the two golf courses are open. It's a quick trip up there, and it is worth it. Man of War Golf, as I just said, the best practice facility anywhere. You can take a lesson, too, and you can get a club fitting, all while doing social distancing. Go see them. Edwin Watts Golf, go online right now. Hopefully they'll be open real soon, and we can go back in. Clark's Pump and Shop, Dan Cummins in Paris and Georgetown, all our great partners. See you next week. Backspin Golf on ESPN Sports Radio, 1300 and 92.5.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their five public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play Golf Lexington.